Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Fulpen, where we talk about inside the game and the business of football. How's it going, Neil?
Great, Justin. It's a busy time and an exciting time, and I'm ready to get to it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, we're in week 10 of the college football season, week 11 of the college football season, week 10 of the NFL season. So, you know, definitely as far as right in the mix of there. You know, we want to hit on some different topics today, scouts, college players, all-star games, and coaches, and how those guys all impact the business of football, how that we are kind of in this crunch time of the evaluation process, you know, what's going on there with the All-Star games, and obviously we've seen coaches being fired and how that will impact the business of football as well. So let's start about, you know, scouts, and we've talked a lot about the evaluation process. And really that starts kind of in the junior day back in March, and now it's been going on, you know, and they'll continue to do it. We talked about the cross checkers, people that kind of go in there and evaluate that. A lot of the scouts obviously have been to the Power 5 conferences and the FBS schools and the FCS and Division 2. But now as Division 2 kind of finishes up, they obviously, there's the last week of D2 football, and then they roll into their playoffs. We're getting the same type of, you know, schedule of the FCS as they roll into their playoffs. Let's talk about the scouts and where they're at now with their evaluation process.
Well, excuse me. I think it's interesting because at this point, scouts, as you kind of alluded to, they've kind of seen all the major players, I think, at this point, at least the area scouts have. Now it's kind of moving up, and the cross-checkers are going out. The national scouts are going out, and they're looking at these players, kind of giving them their sanction or, I guess, endorsement or whatever. Or maybe not. Maybe not saying that they like what they see. I've spoken to scouts before, and I always ask, you know, how do players slip through the cracks? Why do small school players get overlooked, or even sometimes big school players that are maybe playing out of position or whatever? And I always get back, they feel like they want to evaluate and over-evaluate those guys going in the top 100 because those are the real difference makers. They're the ones you're paying all your money to, so you got to make sure you get those picks right. And for that reason, the smaller school players and, you know, some of the lesser prospects fall through the cracks. So I think that they're going out and really trying to make sure that those top 100 players, seniors, and also juniors that they know are going to be coming out are really well evaluated. And I think that's why they're spending most of their time this time of year anyway.
For sure. And I think when you look at the spring grades, and that's something that obviously agents, financial advisors, everybody that's in kind of in the business is always looking to get their hands on National and Bledsoe spring grades. And that's a cottage industry in itself there. But I think that's really the roadmap of these scouts is they take those spring grades that National and Bledsoe produce, and then they're, you know, that's kind of how that they, you know, evaluate. And I think you see those guys who have the reject grades, the 1.0s, the 1.2s, they're graded by National. Those guys then, you know, can help themselves, and then now they've got to evaluate them, you know, on film. But when, you know, the spring grades came out, they said, hey, these are guys that are not even worth looking at. You know, so I think that's a part of it, you know, because you've seen guys who haven't had grades in the spring or had those reject grades, guys that they're on 53-man rosters right now. So, I think sometimes that they get so locked into what the junior evaluations, you know, in the junior days and the thing that they watch on film, and, you know, and that they miss some of those guys. And again, there's tons of people, there's tons of players throughout all the levels of football. And when you talk about that, that's they've got to be able to try to, you know, narrow it down and try to be able to manage where they're going, what schools are going to see, what players are going to see. And again, like you said, what guys are they going to invest those top 100 picks into? And again, we've seen over the last couple of years, I mean, the juniors are, you know, 70, you know, on the average, probably 70 guys in the last couple of years that has come out. Right. So you've got to really evaluate those guys. And those guys are first, second round picks, you know, usually.
Right. And they still don't know who's coming out for sure. Now, I know there are a lot of scouts that will come back to me and say, hey, this guy's coming out, this guy's coming out. Some of the more the bigger schools, the football factories like the LSUs and maybe the Alabamas, they're pretty clear when scouts come through, hey, look, this guy's going to be coming out, this guy's going to be coming out. So it's real easy to determine who those players are. But with some of the smaller schools, some of the lesser schools, maybe the MACs, maybe MAC schools or the Sun Belt schools or what have you, a little bit more off the beaten path. There's a lot more mystery to it and a lot more, you know, kind of guessing on whether a guy's going to come out. I know I'm working with a wide receiver from a MAC school right now who's really trying to weigh it and trying to get evaluations from scouts kind of through back channels so he can make the right decision. This is going on across college football right now, and I think a lot of people out there don't realize that and maybe don't understand kind of what these players are facing. I mean, there's so many different moving parts when it comes to making that decision. You know, what if your coach is leaving? What if your quarterback is leaving? What if your offensive line is leaving? You know, that will affect, you know, how you play and who you are if you're a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end perhaps. And there's so many different things that go into that. And of course, there are off-field considerations as well. You know, a lot of players have had kids, and so they need to do something to make money, or maybe their parents are in dire financial straits, and so there's a lot of issues there. So there's just a lot going on, a lot of decisions being made that don't get a lot of publicity, but they're definitely out there, and that's kind of what people around the game are talking about right now.
Excuse me, for sure. And in regards to college players, you know, in regards to people that, like we said, leaving, you know, for the NFL draft, or even seniors that are in there, obviously they're looking to kind of figure out the agents, where they're going to go train, everything that kind of, you know, is able to go after the field. And obviously different guys have different ways of you know, this process. And obviously representing guys and recruiting guys, you know, you always ask a guy, hey, what's your process? What are you doing? Are you gonna meet with the guys before the season? You know, are you going to wait till Thanksgiving? You know, are you going to meet guys during the season? You know, kind of everybody's got a different thing. And then also, who's going to be involved? Is it your high school coach? Is it your parents?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is it your college coach, you know, your position coach?
Yeah.
Who else is going to be an influencer, you know, on that? And then again, you know, what's important, you know, to the player? You know, some guys want, you know, some guys just care, hey, where are you sending me to train? Some guys really want to be educated on the process and really, you know, believe in different factors, you know, there. And again, I think that's where how, you know, if you look through the 850, 900 agents that are going after, you know, the different college players that are out there, the different, you know, sales process that they're going through to say, hey, this is why you should hire me to you know, represent you.
Right.
Really, I mean, what are you hearing, you know, in there with regards to, you know, agents, college players, kind of in that realm?
Well, you know, one thing that I think bears mentioning, because it's so poorly understood across, you know, with your rank and file college football fan, you know, players can meet with agents during the season. I mean, you alluded to that. That doesn't make them ineligible. That doesn't make them underhanded or unethical or doing anything illegal. That's just part of the process. Jared Goff, the quarterback from California, has already completed his process and kind of knows which way he's going, or at least has cut a lot of agencies that he was originally talking to from the field. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's also a pretty good indicator of what his plans are for after the season. Now, obviously nothing has been decided, nothing is guaranteed, but it's certainly looking that he will, you know, like he's, you know, leaning on coming out, which I don't think would surprise many people. But when reports like that come out, everyone's like, oh, my gosh, oh, no, he's going to lose his eligibility, he's leaving, or what have you. There's nothing untoward at all about that. And I think most people should understand that. I think another good point is scouts really, I don't think they'll ever admit this, but when you're hottest is when scouts want you the most. If, let's say, Jared Goff came back next year and had a lousy season, they're not going to say, ah, forget about that, we'll look at his junior year. No, they'll take him on what he's done most recently, and they'll grade him down for that, and they'll penalize him for it a bit. So I used to be one who really felt like you had to stay all 4 years and play out all your eligibility, but having understanding the process a bit more now, I think it's just smarter to strike while the iron's hot, and I think most players feel the same way.
Oh, and I agree with you, you know, there. I think the problem, though, when you look at that, Neil, is that, you know, some guys think that they're better than what they are and declare,
sure,
and when they've got deficiencies in their game, and they could come back and improve on that. Now, again, Jared,
sure,
Goff, a Paxton Lynch, guys that are hot now, yeah, go. But we'll see,
right,
we'll see probably 20, 25 guys, and you see it in every draft class, that you're like, why did you come out? And they go seventh round PFA. I mean, you said there's a handful of guys who came out last year who didn't get drafted. So,
oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying that if they would have been back for their senior year and would have, you know, they would have then gotten drafted, but then they would have, number one, scouts aren't evaluating juniors like they are seniors. And I think that's one,
correct,
thing that, you know, you're right, at the football factories, that they're looking at those guys saying, okay, hey, this guy's coming out. So they're starting to do some evaluation. But if you're a senior, they're evaluating you from March all the way, you know, till April.
Right.
And if you're a junior, it's probably more January to April, you know.
Yeah.
And so they don't know a ton, you know, a ton about you, especially if you're not a top 100 guy. You know, if you're one of,
yeah,
those, you know, fifth, sixth round juniors that, you know, decided to declare. And again, everybody's got a different situation, and I understand that. But I think,
mm-hmm,
one
mm-hmm.
time sometimes is you get the agents who come in there, and they're trying to look for a client, and they'll talk a guy coming out early.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
mm-hmm,
I go to the All-Star game process, and again, and maybe I'm biased because of all my years of involvement in that. But you do see guys who can raise their, you know, their draft stock from the All-Star game process. You talked about,
yeah,
a Mac wide receiver. Well, let's talk about a Mac offensive tackle. Eric Fisher was a guy who,
mm-hmm,
was maybe a second-round pick and goes all the way to be the number one overall pick. Now, should he have been?
Mm-hmm.
That's here nor there. He was.
Mm-hmm.
He made a lot of money,
mm-hmm,
at that week of the Senior Bowl. And if you're a junior,
mm-hmm,
if you're a fifth, sixth, seventh-round junior, and you declare – well, now you don't have that opportunity to go to an All-Star game. And we talked about the NFLPA,
yeah,
trying to get juniors to get involved, but we know that's not the case. If you've got to be a senior to be able to get invited to, you know, an All-Star game there. So I think that's a huge, you know, aspect of it. And speaking of the All-Star games, you know, the Senior Bowls, we're seeing things come out about, you know, Senior Bowl invites, NFLPA, there's a little bit of rumors here or there. You know, the East-West Shrine game on their Twitter feed is shooting out guys who have accepted invites there. You know, obviously we're in that cycle. I mean, I think, you know, the Senior Bowl, what I don't understand is why the Senior Bowl just doesn't go out there and say, hey, this is all everybody we sent invites to. You know, I know they want to try to do it on a marketing standpoint, but who cares?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
really,
like,
the number one game.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they'd rather make kind of a measured approach and kind of release it a bit more and, you know, kind of keep themselves in the news, so to speak, rather than make one big splash because, you know, Justin, you and I and pretty much everyone in the football world knows the Senior Bowl, they're the big dog and they get to eat first. So everyone they want, they get. I think maybe one reason they do that is because if they released everyone that they sent invitations to and then it became clear that some of them weren't going to play, then maybe they would have egg on their faces. I don't know. They don't want, I guess, a certain player that accepts an invite to look like a second-round pick rather than a first-round pick, so to speak. I mean, they want their guys that they invited first to take all their invitations. Although I'll give Phil Savage a lot of credit. I know you've sat in the room at weigh-ins on, I guess, on Tuesdays now, and he goes in and reads through everyone who was invited and why they chose not to come. And sometimes I think there's a little contempt in his voice for the ones that chose to pass on the game. You know, every year there are players that pass on the game, and it really makes you scratch your head because they really could use that opportunity. I know last year, I guess it was 2 years ago, there was a Pac-12 player who chose to pass up the game, not due to injuries, not due to anything, and then went undrafted. And all I could think was, what did you lose? What did you think you were not gaining by going to that game? I mean, here's a player that I think was highly regarded through his college years, but had a few deficiencies that definitely could have been improved, or at least I guess scouts could have recognized that he was trying to improve them. And yet he passes up the game, misses that opportunity and a great showcase, and falls in the draft and goes undrafted. And I think he's still knocking around the league, but certainly not at a place where he might have had he gone to the game and had a nice week. So there's a lot that goes into the decision-making process. It's, to me, it's fascinating to look at who goes and who doesn't go and why they don't go and all those different considerations that are part of the All-Star process.
Well, yeah, I mean, Geno Smith's a prime example. Two years ago, decides not to go, and everybody kind of knocked him through that draft process and thought he could have helped himself. And, you know, everybody thought, you know, hey, he would have been a first-round pick potentially. You know,
right.
Drops, you know, to the second there, and obviously he's had documented, you know, struggles there on the field there for the Jets, and he'll
sure.
be able to turn that around with this other opportunity that he's getting there again. You know, but I think, you know, the Senior Bowl standpoint is, okay, these guys are tweeting this stuff out. Lawrence Thomas, who was, I was somewhat surprised that he got a Senior Bowl, the defensive lineman for Michigan State, you know, put on his Instagram. We saw the running back from Arkansas, Jonathan Williams, who hasn't even played this year,
right.
you know, sent out a picture on Instagram that he had gotten an invite to the Senior Bowl. And what does that say to players that a guy like Jonathan Williams, who doesn't play a senior year. Now, if you go and you look at his preseason grades from National and Bledsoe, you know, had a decent grade from what scouts have said,
right.
you know, what does that say to players? And what's your thoughts on a guy who doesn't play gets invited to the most prestigious All-Star game?
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes the games want to get a couple guys in that they know will accept. And if they're from the SEC, so much the better. And I think that might be the situation with Williams. I think here's a guy that plays a high-gloss position, and really the Senior Bowl holds all the cards. And so maybe they felt like, let's invite this kid. He's going to say yes. He's an easy guy to put out there. It makes us look good because we're kind of giving him – he's kind of a reclamation project, and we're giving him a chance at success. That's the best thing that I can think. I think it's also probably Phil Savage saying that this is not a glitter class for running backs necessarily. And so we got to take whoever we can get. As you know, Jonathan, very rarely does a senior running back make it to his fourth year of eligibility. Everyone who has high upside and puts up numbers leaves early because everyone, I think every running back kind of sees it as I've got X number of carries in my body, and I'm not going to waste them in college when I could be getting paid for it. So I think that this is probably a situation where running backs are a little bit more in demand, and so it was a little easier choice to go out and just select a guy that had gotten a lot of consideration, was in his senior year, and they could take and pretty good about him coming to the game, and who knows, maybe even having a star turn during the week of the game.
Yeah, for sure, and obviously, you know, I would have thought that, hey, maybe the NFLPA or, you know, it's a game that, hey, you know, could have used a guy like that because you wouldn't, you know, could help the star power there. I just was surprised that the Senior Bowl, you know, on their first round had, you know, invited him, you know, not playing. Now his preseason, you know, opinion of him regards to the NFL community was high. So I mean, I can see that there, and it was something that we tried to do a couple of years ago with Niles Davis from Arkansas, mm-hmm. the Kansas City Chiefs running back, is we tried to mm-hmm. invite him. You know, he was injured. He was kind of – there was questions of, hey, where was his eligibility standpoint there? You know, he decided not to come and, you know, and play in the game in Arkansas, the Players All-Star Classic, you know, but that we were trying to get that done, obviously, as a, you know, an injured running back to bring some splash and some pizzazz there, you know, when we're talking about a second tier All-Star game, not the premier, you know, game that the Senior Bowl is there. So I mean,
right.
I think we'll see more, you know, more invites, you know, pop up, whether it's through, you know, social media or, you know, officially from, you know, the games itself, whether it's the, you know, the Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl, et cetera, in regards to when that comes out there. You know, as far as the NFLPA game, you know, again, they're kind of keeping things, you know, under wraps there. You know, what does that say about them and kind of where they're at in their evaluation process there?
Well, you know, the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl is kind of an interesting, kind of an odd duck. I think when they first came on the scene 5 or 6 years ago, you know, they thought – they kind of had a tiger by the tail because they were going to have juniors in. And really kind of showed, I guess, that they hadn't done their homework because they didn't understand that NFL teams can't evaluate players until the draft class is certified around the middle of January. Excuse me. That precludes juniors. Well, you do one of two things. You can have a junior game that no scouts attend, or you can get rid of your, exclude your juniors and have scouts in the game. So most games want to have scouts because that's kind of what drives the players coming there. And so they figured that out after year one, but they've continued to have little issues, and they continue to act like they're the number two game when the results just don't merit that. And they continue to kind of make little interesting decisions like holding back on their invites. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to get in their mind sometime. We could go for another whole show on the NFLPA Bowl and how they do things and how they probably should do things. And I'm sure you have your opinions about that as well, Justin, as much experience as you have with games. I can't really speculate on why they do it like that, but that's just how the NFLPA rolls.
Yeah, and it's, you know, speaking about all-star games, speaking about small school guys, as we've talked about there, just got an update as far as a Shrine Game update. Javon Hargraves from South Carolina State, the defensive tackle, has accepted the play in the 2016 East-West Shrine Game. So, you know, a small school guy who, you know, a lot of people had liked there out of South Carolina State gets a chance, an opportunity to play in the Shrine Game. So congrats to him, and you know, look forward to, you know, him trying to make the most of his evaluation process there. So, but I think that's what we'll see, you know, as things, you know, pop out there in regards to games, and it's something that, you know, agents always want to keep an eye on because, hey, that's, you know, an opportunity that for their client or potential client to get in front of, you know, NFL scouts there.
Yeah.
You know, as we roll down here, we saw what happened in Missouri in regards to the president had resigned because of issues that's going on there. We've seen a lot of coaches resign, you know, different things there in the college football landscape in regards to coaches and coaches changes. And we know that there'll be a handful of guys that get fired and, you know, and hot coaches. The offensive line coach from Alabama, he's kind of rumored to be able to be the front runner of the Miami job there. You know, kind of as we kind of go through this process and different coaches kind of come up there, if they're going to stay, they're going to go, where they're going to go. What are you hearing on different coaches and as the jobs come open, and who's kind of the hot guys that you've heard, whether it's in the NFL or college, there as we get through this last part of the season?
Excuse me. Well, you know, as for candidates, I think we're going to see a lot more of that as we go forward in the next month or so. So many agents are out kind of trying to promote their guys and trying to spark interest in them. And using the media is one, you know, very popular way of doing that. Just to take one name, I mean, Sean Payton's name is starting to appear in a lot of places, and it's looking like he may be exiting the Saints given the ownership problems they've had. And so he'd be a very popular name as well. I mean, I guess most teams have to ask themselves the question, speaking of colleges, but I guess pro teams as well, do they really want to break the bank for a proven name, or do they want to bring in kind of a young, hot coordinator like a Mario Cristobal and hope that they prove themselves and they kind of get a bargain and that, you know, they can maybe get a coach who's willing to spend more time there and see it as a decision, a career-making event, you know. You know, schools like Michigan that have an unlimited bankroll could bring in a Jim Harbaugh, but other schools maybe not as much. And, you know, maybe we're getting to a point where even a Miami, Florida, which was a once proud school that could, you know, do no wrong and had such a line of talent for so long, maybe they're looking to bring in a guy where the risk factor is not quite as high because they're not going to have to really pay a major salary to Mario Cristobal. And he's obviously got connections to the school and would be happy to be there and maybe would stick around for a long time. And the negative there is that he didn't do a whole lot at Florida International. So is he going to excite the fan base? I mean, is he going to really galvanize, you know, the U Nation, so to speak, and really create that energy that they're looking for in the wake of Al Golden? I don't know. It's a good question, and it'll be fun to watch. I guess that's one of the compelling storylines of college football as there's more and more turnover in the coaching ranks.
For sure, and you know, I think that's those some awesome valid points that you bring up there. One thing that I you know, you brought up as far as agents, and you, one thing you had interesting on inside the league was the assistant coaches and who their agent was, whether it was when they were playing and different things like that. How you know, besides the Jimmy Sexton of the world who represents all the SEC coaches, or seems like all the SEC coaches, your head coaches there, how much influence do you think the agents of those assistant coaches, you know, where is that realm? Because I think that's an untalked about standpoint is the coaches' representation, the coaches' agents when in the college game as well as the, you know, the pro game. You know, in your experience, where have you seen in regards to the influence there and kind of, you know, how that kind of that business, you know, model is involved, and you know, and where that's going.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting market because it's kind of an untapped and evolving market. The difficulty for the agent in this situation is an assistant. You know, let's say you got a position coach at a mid-sized school, and he does a good job and gets consideration as a coordinator at a bigger school. He's not really in a bargaining position. He can't really go to the other school and say, well, I'll come for X amount unless he's got a lot of suitors. He's usually going to say, hey, I'm coming because I know that's the last step before I get a head coaching slot. So the problem for the agent is, how do you make money off of that? And did the coach really need you? I mean, I think those that have become head coaches certainly have agents because they want to get another shot. But the position coaches, they just got to climb the ladder any way they can. And so they, I don't know. I mean, I've spoken to several agents who have tried this, and the difficulty they have is getting the coach to pay them. Maybe not because the coach is less than ethical, but because the coach kind of felt like the agent didn't play a significant role in him getting that job. So it's a tough place to be. But if you've got enough leverage, and, you know, you mentioned the Jimmy Sexton, who's got so many coaches and so many clients that have a lot of power and they're on their way up, then, yeah, I mean, it is, you know, I think Sexton's done a great job of leveraging that and getting coaches in the right position and even replacing coaches of his that got fired with new coaches of his. There's an obvious value add there, but for the rank-and-file coach who's kind of climbing the ladder and he's still an assistant, I don't know, it's debatable, but you are seeing more and more coaches that are seeking out agents and trying to help them, giving them that edge, and I think that's going to continue to happen. And I think more and more agents are seeing that as attractive because players are so volatile and because the training fees have become so much a part of the industry and so much a part of, the profile of what the modern-day agent has to be. And it gets a little pricey with a lot of risk and not as much rewards as maybe there should be. So, again, coaches have become an attractive client, and I think they'll continue to be more and more attractive.
Yeah, and I think that's the standpoint is you've got to work for those guys. You've got to push, you know, them to other head coaches as well as to, you know, the ADs,
right,
you know, of the world, you know, there in regards if they're assistants, whether position coordinators or what that may be. So, hey, you know,
right,
we've rolled through a ton of topics here, you know, today, you know, great, brought some, you know, great value to the, you know, the listeners there. Kind of, you know, we'll wrap it up real quick here. Anything new and exciting, you know, our listeners should be looking forward inside the league or succeed in football this week?
Well, we're going to continue to track things that you've touched on as far as all the all-star berths. We try to inventory them all there, and we try to bust out ones that haven't been announced yet. We'll also continue to track agencies as they relate to assistant coaches as well as head coaches. We'll continue to update those lists. And trainers also. We'll have a spotlight on trainers. This is a big month for training facilities as they try to attract agents and try to let players know what they're doing and how they're working and a number of other topics. So that's kind of what we'll focus on this next week as we continue to gain steam towards December, which is our big month when player signings are taking place, all-star invitations are going out, and all the things that are setting up for draft season. So it'll be another big week for us, and we're looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely be here next week on Inside the Football Business as we talk more about the game inside the game and off the field and what's going on in the dollars and cents and different things that are involved inside the football business. So look forward to another show next week, and you have a great week, Neil. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin. See you next week.